I feel like, you know, we in the media have been trying to get you really scared about your privacy for years now. You know, and now everybody knows that Facebook is keeping all kinds of information about you. Google has all kinds of information about you. And by and large, people don't care. They'll tell you directly, let them spy on me. I'm not doing anything. I think that, you know, we have our concerns about it, but we understand when the big tech platforms spy on us, they're doing so in order to serve us ads. It's not really about you. It's about putting you in a category with another 100,000 people like you who might also be interested in Spanx for men or something. So that's why Facebook keeps files on you to sell you stuff. But why does the government do it? Your government is hiring a private company to investigate and assemble open source intelligence on private citizens. The name of that private company is Welland. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Jesse.
What do you have to tell me about today?
Okay, so you know Brandy?
Brandy Morin, brilliant journalist who's filed stories for us and who we were all very concerned about because she was arrested for doing journalism.
No, yes. I'm media. I'm not going behind the lines.
You have to.
I am here to document this.
You need to.
I am not going behind the lines.
No,
I am not.
I cannot be here.
Yes, I can. No, I am behind here. I'm not obstructing you.
Behind the line.
No, no, I'm sorry.
She was arrested for doing journalism. She'd been in Edmonton covering Tent City. When they went in to move the Tent City, they arrested her. They dropped the charges because she did nothing wrong. Also, we'll give a plug that she just won the Hillman for broadcast, so she's doing okay.
Yeah, for an hour-long documentary that she made with Ricochet, Indigenews, and The Real News Network. And I should also just mention that, much as Karen is friends with Brandy, I'm partners with the editor of Ricochet.
Enough about awards. I want to go back to... Well, I brought her up. Around the time, you'll remember that she was arrested, something else happened. And I don't know if you saw, Jesse, there was a weird tweet that went out from this Twitter account.
Or maybe you saw the Ricochet story about this, at least the headline of the Ricochet story.
She was being spied on.
Yeah, the headline of the story was, secretive intelligence firm with Alberta government contract spying on journalist Brandy Morin.
So this is a secretive intelligence company that was contracted by the government of Alberta. What is this company?
It's a company that has particular expertise and focus and specialty on tracking activists.
They look at animal rights activists. They follow unions. They look at climate activists, indigenous rights activists. Lately, they've been following Free Palestine protests. And you see these links go down their Twitter feed. And when you click on the link, it brings you to a paywall.
What are they called?
Welland.
Which is almost disappointing because it's spelled W-E-L-U-N-D, which we hoped would be like maybe Weland or Wayland, like the company in the Alien films. But no, it's Welland. It's pronounced Welland, like the canal. And it's seemingly a reference to a character in Norse/Germanic mythology.
Of course, Jonathan would know that. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, we know nothing about this company.
So if you are either a government or a private company that has to worry about what the protesters are up to. You're somehow controversial, protesters don't like you, and you perceive them as some sort of liability or threat or enemy. This is a company that you hire to just keep an eye on them or to actually do anything about them?
Well, hold on. We're going to get there. This is what I'm going to say. This company comes up in the news from time to time, and maybe over since it started in 2007, there's been less than 6 articles written about it. Nobody knows much about it. They always say it was started by an MI6 agent. Then they never give the name. And I was wondering, was it really started by an MI6 agent? And for anybody who doesn't know, that is the British Foreign Spying Agency.
That's the one that James Bond worked for.
Yes. Yeah.
And here is where our journey begins. Basically, the two of you got really curious who or what is Welland, and then you set out to find out.
It was a mystery, and so we started to look.
Before we go down this path, did you find out?
We found out.
We found out.
A lot.
As is often the case, I found more information than I know what to do with and more information about the people who run it than I feel comfortable even sharing, and yet there are still mysteries at the center of it in terms of what is the extent of their activities? Has that changed over time? What does it mean to track versus to spy? And what kind of company are we actually dealing with here? Because, I mean, I think we all kind of know and accept that there are many, many, many private intelligence companies in the world. As far as we can tell, and as far as a number of government agencies in different countries who've contracted them have said in their own like procurement documents, they seem to be the only such company in the world, or at least in the English language world, that specifically specializes in activists and activism.
I will say that there's still some mysteries, but we definitely found out why people might be worried or concerned.
I assume that you tried to reach out to Wellen to get them to talk to us?
Yes, I placed some phone calls.
My name is Ethel. I think you just called me.
Oh, hi. Thanks for calling me back. Yes, my name is Jonathan. I'm with Canada Land in Toronto.
Okay.
And we're working on a story about Wellen.
No, thank you. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
No one has returned them or agreed to speak as of yet.
All right, I'm intrigued. And if I were in your shoes and starting this journey, my first question would be, is Welland some sort of offshoot of MI6? Were you able to find that out?
Here's what we know about who started it. The first name on the business records and the person first associated with this was this guy named Peter David Orwin.
Peter David Orwin. He's our possible MI6 connection.
He was a decorated military veteran in the UK. And I have this printout from the London Gazette. So this is from his citation for the Military Cross back in December of 1966. On 27th of July, Lieutenant Orwin was ordered to lay an ambush at a point a mile east of the camp and to destroy the enemy moving on Habilean during the night. It was the fifth successive night that Lieutenant Orwin had ambushed routes leading the Habilean. The total strength of his patrol was 14. A few minutes after 11 p.m., some 15 to 20 dissident tribesmen moved into a sunken track to the rear of the ambush position. The section covering this approach waited until the enemy were within their position and then sprung the ambush. When fire was opened, Lieutenant Orwin went to the rear section with a non-commissioned officer, and they together engaged the enemy at point-blank range. So he was in the British military, got the military cross.
He was a decorated war hero of Britain in the 60s.
He then pops up again in the 1992 New Year's Honours in the UK, where he was at the time, listed them at the time as having been first secretary at the embassy in Tel Aviv. So how did he get from there to there? Well, something that happened in the late 90s, like 98, 99, is that a list was leaked online of purported MI6 officers. And this understandably freaked out the British government. It's kind of funny to read the articles now because it was the early days of the internet when governments were still hopeful that with a proper takedown order, you could get some information removed from the internet. But they discovered the hard way that no, even if you get something down from one website, it will proliferate to others.
This is like pre-WikiLeaks. Where would a list of MI6 agents, this feels like a Bond plot. We're going to leak the names of all of our agents. I think that actually happened in a Bond movie.
Skyfall.
Tanner, he's posted the first five names. Their cover's blown. They're in danger. Get them out now.
But yeah, it was leaked online, and the British government kind of wanted to have it both ways with this, both them saying this list is riddled with errors, but also, oh, there's actually some actual agents named on the list, so this has to come down. It's a matter of national security.
Yeah, so governments often find themselves, they don't want to verify the document,
yes.
But they kind of end up verifying it by being really, really, really interested in getting rid of it.
He appeared on this list, and some of the details there were consistent with publicly available sources at the time. I mean, it's conceivably falsifiable, but it's consistent with his birth date and other records, with the posting in Tel Aviv, with the military cross honor. It mentions him having served or been in Athens in the 70s, as well as in Brazil in the 80s, and then in the Netherlands in the 90s. So we don't know for a fact that he was an MI6 agent.
He was on a list, a leaked list of purported MI6 agents, and somewhere from the 60s when he served with the British military to the 90s when he purportedly is exposed as an MI6 agent, he moved around the world according to this document, and at some point he moved from the military to MI6, purportedly. Sounds like a spy.
At the very least, we know he was part of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which MI6 is attached to.
Yes.
Okay, so possible, probable MI6 agent Peter David Orwin is the first piece of this puzzle. That puzzle takes the shape of us trying to figure out who the mysterious company is. Is this a one-man shop, or who else is behind this company, Welland?
So there's three guys that effectively have been behind Welland, as far as we can tell. Orwin, the possible, likely former spy, is one. Number two is a guy named Paul Mercer.
And Paul Mercer, first of all, he's the author of the book Peace of the Dead, The Truth Behind Nuclear Disarmers.
With peace in quotation marks.
Like, scare quotes, peace. This is the peace of the dead. Like, oh, this is why we should have nuclear arms, because the only way you'll have peace otherwise is if we're all dead.
This is what the blurb says. The truth about how the Kremlin destroyed the credibility of the nuclear deterrent using peace propaganda and lies. As a result, we gave up the neutron bomb, W-75 weapon, and have had numerous wars, killing millions ever since.
So he hates protesters so much he wrote a book about it.
You would think so, but here's the thing. He was also kind of a protester himself.
What was he protesting?
Well, a bunch of things. Okay, so I didn't think Mercer was that important at first. And actually, our producer Bruce put me onto him. And when I started to look into him, he's this very interesting and contradictory character. So he graduates from the University of Nottingham in 1982, Bachelor of Science in Engineering. Then he becomes a freelance journalist. For many years, 1982 and until 2007, he's a longstanding member of the National Union of Journalists. He writes articles for national newspapers, including The Observer, The Sunday Times, London Evening Standard. He works as a researcher at BBC News, and he works for Reuters. And he also worked in the public relations in the film business, and he helped to launch Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest in the UK.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with anything, but I thought it was interesting. But here's the thing. While he's doing that, he's also participating in a bunch of protests himself. He was in a demonstration against McDonald's in 2004. He was involved with targeting Gala Casino and bingo halls with animal rights campaigners.
So he's a pro-nuclear weapon and pro-animal rights. These are his politics.
Well, why would somebody be a journalist and out photographing protesters and then also participating in protests when they hold the kind of views that they're kind of a little bit anti-protest?
Well, it might just be against the causes, not protesting itself.
Or he might be spying on them. Bong!
Wow.
It might be a cover.
Right, of course. But how do you know that?
Okay, I know that because he got caught. In 2007, there was this group and they're, you know, activists, they're the campaign against the arms trade, and they've been wanting to launch a legal suit. And it doesn't matter what it was about. The point is that all of those documents that they'd been keeping kind of in a small group ended up getting leaked to the British aerospace company.
So this is a protest group that finds out that a major corporation that they are protesting against has all of this internal documentation that they should not have.
Exactly.
So somebody has been spying on them and they launch a court action to find out who.
Exactly. And this is what they find out. They find the British Aerospace Systems Company had hired a group to spy on them called Global Open.
Global Open.
Global Open subcontracts. And they subcontract to Paul Mercer, our guy. And he does this under his own company that he opens called Lingde Associates, which is French for two lines or second line. And Mercer uses the pseudonym Dave Durham for transmitting all his messages that he's spying on back to the company.
Uh-huh.
I got the court documents. And what he describes himself as doing is he says, as a result of my knowledge of political organizations and a consequent of my work for Reuters, I have a very good reputation and ability to rigorously research the internet. This knowledge has been used several times by companies who have commissioned me to advise them on which political organizations they should engage with. But he also brags that he got a lot of intel from a wide range of contacts and sometimes even receives information anonymously or from journalists. This guy, Orin, who had actually started Welland, the MI6 agent, we find out through the court documents that he was working with Paul Mercer at Paul Mercer's shop.
I think it was may have been a partnership, much as this document said, that identifies Orwin as the other partner in Line 2 in this Lindu company. And it appears that Welland, when it was founded in 2007, may have been, yeah, a continuation of some of these efforts, albeit without Mercer's name overtly attached.
I think Paul Mercer is the original spy. And he got exposed, and he was too hot. And so I'm speculating here. But Oren starts the company under his name as a cover for Paul Mercer. That's what I think happened.
All right, that makes sense. I guess like you're in the spy game and like, I don't know, your band breaks up, you start a new band.
Yeah, potentially.
Okay, to recap, we have our probably MI6 agent, Peter Orwin, and now we have just heard about Paul Mercer spying on local activists. But you said that there were three guys behind this shady organization, Welland. Who is number three?
The third person who's been sort of a consistent key player at Welland in the UK, as far as we can tell, is a guy named Lawrence Miles Hardcastle, which is just a wonderful name.
Say it one more time.
Lawrence Miles Hardcastle.
Lawrence Miles Hardcastle.
Well, these are great Bond
names. These are amazing names.
Euros again, Hardcastle.
Lawrence Hardcastle, he's a little different. Whereas Orwin was, you know, born in the 40s.
He's like 80 years old now.
Yeah, Orwin is like 80 now. Mercer is born in like 1960. He's a boomer. Hardcastle is pretty squarely a millennial. And he doesn't seem to have had any particular background in policing or intelligence or military strategy or anything like that. Rather, his background and his origin story is in web design.
I knew he'd like that.
The third guy in the band is a millennial web designer.
Yeah, this is the thing. An MI6 agent, a washed-up journalist, and a web designer walk into a spy company.
So Hardcastle began building websites as a teenager.
We're going to start off by Larry telling us in his story about how his business all came about. Larry is a bit of a legend in Tunbridge Wells, as far as I'm concerned, as far as web
very
design
kind,
agencies go. And the reason I say that is because he set his business up when he was 14, when he was at school, right?
Seems a long time ago now.
I bet it does. So I wonder if you could share with us how that all came about and how it's grown to where you are now.
Yeah, gosh, cast my mind back. It was really around the time that computers really started becoming that much more popular in.
By the time he was in his early 20s, he'd started a company called Larry Tech.
This is getting less sexy by the minute.
And he got involved with a whole bunch of different companies and, you know, as clients. And you can go back on the old archive pages of Larry Tech, you can see that Welland was one of their early clients, circa like 2008 or so. So I've sort of inferred that sort of how like Canada Land's original web developer has shares in this company. This may have been how he got involved, except he actually seems to have stayed much more involved. Orwin basically steps back, circa 2014 or so, and Hardcastle kind of, at least on paper, takes over.
He's their kid web designer.
Yes.
And then he takes over the spy company.
Yeah, he's young and he kind of looks like Zuckerberg, but a hipster.
He has his thumbs and fingers in quite a lot of businesses. He's a serial entrepreneur until his LinkedIn was taken down just in the past few days, around the time I guess I started making inquiries.
Wait, when you started making inquiries, he took his information offline?
Well, it's not available as of this morning. I don't know when that actually happened. His LinkedIn went down, yes.
Oh, that's why it's down. Yeah. I was trying to look from this morning.
So the primary business he listed, of the many things he's involved in, is Kent Wines, of which he's a co-founder. It's a subscription service that offers a selection of three Kent and or Sussex wines delivered to your door every month. He's quite big on local businesses. Another thing, he has a stake in a local pub. Called the Hawk and Berry or the Hawk and Berry. He owns that through a company he registered called Margaritas Should Never Be Limited. It seems like a decent gastro pub, not open Mondays or Tuesdays.
Okay, my head is spinning a bit. Let me see if I have my bearings here. You have asked the question, who or what is this company, Welland? And you have determined it is these three guys. Orwin, who very much seems like an international man of mystery, probably a former MI6 agent. Mercer, a former...
A domestic man of mystery.
A domestic man. A local, your friendly neighborhood man of mystery, former Reuters wire service journalist, an anti-protest author, pro-nuclear author, who we have documented has gotten involved in various protest movements, probably to spy on them. And finally, millennial web designer slash side hustle local gastropub owner Hardcastle, who goes from making their website to running the company.
Seemingly, yes.
And that is Welland, a British company of spies for governments and corporations. So now we know who the main players at Welland are, at least in the UK. What happens next?
And then, in 2016, Hardcastle came to Canada.
Okay, so it's around 2018-ish. Our story finally arrives from the UK in Canada. Tell me what happens now.
Okay, so we actually get to know a little something about Welland for the first time. So this reporter, Adam Fetterman, breaks a story for Mother Jones magazine. And he gets the story because somebody leaks him a tape. So they found out a few things that we didn't know before. One of the things is what kind of information they collect, what kind of services Welland offers. And according to Mother Jones, Welland specializes in profiling activist threats. Now, it maintains a live archive of original content that it says is used by dozens of international corporations, law enforcement agencies, government bodies, and it's got a subscriber-only intelligence platform that appears to be largely composed, according to Mother Jones, of open source data. That's news reports, online information, strategic analysis. And this is also according to what it finds out from the firm's contracts with the Canadian government. And Welland North America is presenting at this petroleum conference in Houston. And the presentation is by the firm's vice president. Now, I'm going to give you a new name, Travis Morin. He's a former U.S. Justice Department special agent. And he previously worked as a senior counterterrorism investigator at Dominion Energy, which is one of the largest suppliers of electricity and natural gas in the United States.
Seems like a good CV for the job. Special agent plus energy industry credentials.
Yeah, at the ATF specifically. And we should note that he is not, in fact, related to Brandy Morin, so far as we know. It's spelled M-O-R-A-N as
Thank
opposed
you for that.
To
Brandy's
That would be odd
M-O-R-I-N.
If they were related. Okay, good hire for Welland.
Yeah, and he also doesn't really like the environmental movement. He describes the activists as the energy industry's most dangerous adversaries. He's always saying things like, what we're talking about here with these climate activists is an existential threat.
I mean, you have to imagine that, like, that's how the environmental activists would like to think of themselves. We are their most dangerous adversaries. We are an existential threat to the energy industry.
I mean, that's sort of the ideal, I think, for them.
That's what they're after.
It's a compliment, really.
But he didn't mean it that way, probably.
Yeah, for the activists, that's the best case scenario.
This company had been so secretive in the past, but like any company, they've got a market. They've got to find new clients.
Exactly.
So they go to like a...
They go to conferences.
They go to conferences. They set up a booth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes they're like insurance conferences. In this case, yeah, they were at like a Texas Independent Oil Producers Conference.
Not only were they at the conference, they actually had like a trade show there. And they'd set up a booth, and Jonathan actually went online and found a picture of them at the booth. And in the picture, they have like their computer laptop open and they're showing an inside page of the kind of information that they share with companies.
Did this process, Jonathan, involve you at any point saying, enhance photo?
No, I mean, Flickr actually has an even more intuitive system where it's just click original size. And oh, thank God, whoever at the conference room uploaded a many thousands of pixels wide photo such that you can zoom in to... You can see this was the photo.
Oh, that's not a very... I've been to a bunch of trade shows. That's not a very sexy booth.
It's not a very sexy booth at all. There's a big banner that says, Understanding the Activist Threat, with pictures of what I believe would have been Antifa protesters at the time.
On Flickr. Hold on. So it's just a very high-resolution photograph.
Yep, so it's clear.
And is this Hardcastle?
No, this is Travis Morin.
This is Travis Morin. Okay. And he's the North American VP. And the resolution is so good that you can actually see the intelligence that he's showing off in this trade booth.
Yeah.
Which is photo enhance, by which I mean I'm just pinching this open. Activist condemns pacifist hegemony that led to Standing Rock's collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So this is an example of their great work spying on Standing Rock protesters.
It's an example of the intelligence they collect. First, when we saw this tweet about Brandy, I wasn't sure, like, is this just like... behind their paywall, are they just summarizing the Edmonton Journal story? And maybe they are there. But what are the sources that they actually collect and what are they actually doing behind this paywall? And in this case, it's an original article they wrote summarizing. It wasn't even that easy to figure out what it was, but I did find, and I sort
Hold
of...
Hold on. I'm also just looking at their kind of cheapo sandwich board signage. Is this like an Incan figure? Is there a logo?
That is, I believe, a reference to the Norse or Germanic figure of Welland.
He's an axe guy or something.
And then it says, in a very like E.E. Cummings lowercase sans serif, understanding the activist threat. And then there are three photographs of threatening activists. There's a very angry young woman with a T-shirt that says Fearless Survivor and some sort of bandana around her neck. There's a dude in a mohawk who seems to be perched on some kind of like, I don't know.
I don't really know what that is.
A series of sticks. And there's a bunch of cops at the base of it. There's like just like bodies, maybe people arrested or something at the bottom. Oh, and then there's a woman being led away by cops in the third picture. Mm-hmm. These are threatening activists.
Yeah. I mean, if you go on their website now, they're pretty careful to, like, the photos alternate between like left-wing and right-wing protests. But it's also pretty clear that when they're talking to an oil industry conference, this is what they talk about and share.
It feels like there's like an indigenous imagery, I don't know, in those photos.
It's hard to say. I mean, the article that they were summarizing was actually from Volume 4, Issue 3 of Anathema, which describes itself on its cover as an anarchist periodical from the occupied Lenape territory known as Philadelphia.
Wait, so you went and you found out that the intelligence they were showing off in their trade booth comes from this zine that you're holding in your hand?
Yeah, someone evidently read this, and it's impenetrable.
So this is what they're charging oil companies for, is like, we found out which zine these guys are?
I mean, for all the stuff you can say about open source intelligence, I don't think the oil company executives are going to be reading, or would have otherwise thought to hire people to read impenetrable essays in anarchist zines. This one is actually called Ungovernable Bodies at Ossetti Sokowin, An Overall Perspective on Why We Stayed.
There's one other thing, though, Jesse, that we find out from the Mother Jones article and also their handy pamphlets that they're handing out. And that's some of the places that they work for.
Adam Fetterman shared with us a copy of the flyer that he described in his article. I'm just going to hand it to you there.
Oh, wow.
And that's the one that they were handing out at the conference.
Okay, so they have a flyer. Welland, helping organizations reduce risk and improve resiliency from the activist threat. And we have a picture here of some very threatening activists. Oh, and here's a list of some clients. This is like their top tier. Wow.
Or presumably, it's a list of company logos, and the implication is that
they're claiming that these are their clients, and they probably are. Shell, Kinder Morgan, Duke Energy, Dominion Energy, McDonald's, Rolls-Royce, CN Rail, and Starbucks.
So yeah, the implication certainly is that these are companies that have used their services. You know, there's also like a job posting I found from a few years ago that they're looking for a UK sales rep, and that boasted their clients include numerous Fortune 500 companies from a wide range of industries, including banking, energy, retail, aviation, pharmaceuticals, construction, and law enforcement in Europe and North America. In Canada, we know about ongoing contracts that they have with Alberta's Public Security and Intelligence Office, and yes, the Alberta government has its own intelligence bureau. And the agencies that have used them and used them in their collection services have included the National Energy Board, Natural Resources Canada.
The Parliamentary Security uses them. Mm-hmm.
So they're doing a lot of work for the Canadian government.
Yeah, different agencies and entities have definitely contracted them at different times.
In 2016, you're going to remember that the Canadian government purchased the Kinder Morgan pipeline for $3.5 billion. That was the one that was bringing oil from Alberta to terminals near Vancouver, right?
I recall.
So Canada's National Energy Board signs a contract with Welland to monitor social media activity and provide the government with weekly updates on activist threats. Now, according to Mother Jones, the contract included access to Welland's intelligence platform, email advice, warnings from Welland researchers, the Welland Weekly Banking Digest, something called the Welland Weekly Activist Overview, and up to 50 hours of bespoke services, which focused on information specific to the safety and security of the agency's staff and activities.
That's pretty vague. When you talk about bespoke services, you're hiring a company to help you, at the very least, prepare and know about activist threats. And who's doing this work in Canada? Is it our three British guys, Hardcastle, and do they hire
so
here?
So their North American operations are run out of Calgary. It was registered in Alberta in 2016, around the time that Hardcastle paid a visit to Calgary.
Lawrence Miles Hardcastle.
Yes, and Welland North America is run by someone with an equally excellent name, Egbert Jan van Wilder.